You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Want to keep your personal number private but still stay connected? With Line 2, you can get a second phone line right on your device with a super simple app and no need for another phone. Whether it's for online shopping, dating, or shielding your main number from spam, Line 2 is an easy way to manage it all. Ready for peace of mind without breaking the bank? Call, text, block, and more for only $9.99. Get started with line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in any app store today. Line 2, your second line simplified.
$40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl, the thing.
Change my whole dress.
Girl, the thing.
Great gowns. Beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Girl,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit Podcast. We have so much stuff to get into. But if you guys will indulge me, I need to ask Chelsea a question because, I'm sorry, did you schedule a talk with us in Liz Goldwyn next week? Because you do understand I could give birth at any moment.
Okay, surely he'll stay up there for one more week.
God willing, I don't want my water to break over Liz Goldwyn's priceless vintage. Or maybe I do.
So for those of you who live in Los Angeles, this coming Thursday, May 22nd, we are doing a very cute little event at Arcade, which is an incredible vintage store in downtown LA. Liz is doing her second closet sale. It is full of lots of rare, fabulous pieces. We will be doing a little Q&A with Liz at 6:30 sharp. And then around 7, shopping will start. And I think there's cocktails and things of that nature.
Mocktails for Liz and myself. So yeah, we would love for you guys to, I mean, most importantly, come by and shop, but also say hello to us.
Say hi to us. You do need to RSVP, though. We will put the link in the show notes. I'll probably have to peace out around 7:38, though, because I have to pick my parents up from the airport in Burbank.
I love this for you.
It's a big day for me.
So we hope to see you there. In other exciting news, we will finally be releasing our live show, the show that we toured last year. We filmed it in Sydney, Australia in December.
The show that you have been procrastinating editing for several months now.
Was I procrastinating the editing or was I procrastinating showing you the edit and getting your notes? Because when we finally got around to that this past weekend, you made a horrifying discovery about yourself, which is something that Tatiana and I have known about you for years and assumed you knew as well.
How the fuck would I know if no one told me?
Chelsea realized as she was watching the edit that oftentimes when she speaks, she closes her eyes as she is speaking.
I did not know this about myself. So you can imagine how horrified I was to watch hours. Not hours, but nearly 2 hours. And then poor Lauren had to go back and like change all the parts where my eyes are like super closed to the wide shot. So you can't really tell.
We will be releasing the live show on Patreon. It is available for purchase. We understand some of you listen to the podcast. You're not ready to commit to the Patreon. That's fine. You will be able to buy it as a one-off purchase. It is, as Chelsea said, nearly 2 hours.
However, if you are a Patreon subscriber at the Richard Burton tier and above, it will be free. So perhaps a good time to upgrade. We also have a very cool mailing next month that will be for the Richard Burton girlies.
There's less of them, but we can't leave out our Isabelle Huppert girls and gays.
Yeah, those are truly the real ones.
If enough people request it, perhaps I will do what I will call every outfit live in Sydney, the eyes wide shut edit of just Chelsea's eyes exclusively closed. And I know some of you might be wondering, why don't you just give this to us for free or include it in our subscription? And we really want to. However, you know that we've talked about this for a while, but we do have to pay for things in the Every Outfit studio. At this point, because you guys have not seen the studio yet, it must feel like a Ponzi scheme of some sort. But we swear it's coming, and we need to pay for lights and cameras and a life coach to help Chelsea not close her eyes when she speaks when she's on camera. This stuff is expensive.
Yes, so we're basically reinvesting in the business. Moving on.
Well, we do have more housekeeping. There really is so much stuff to get into. But before we can get into the news of the week, there are some, I will call it, corrections and omissions in regards to our Met Gala episode.
I'm so glad we're doing this, and we are going to do this every single year moving forward because we always try and record the Met Gala episode as soon as possible because people get really sick of hearing about the Met Gala. But because we do that, we don't necessarily have the context for certain things at the time of recording. But now we do. So let's get into it. Let's start with the fact that Demi Moore's Tom Brown gown was designed to look like a giant straight tie.
To give us a little credit, is only obvious when you see Tom Brown's original sketch. Then you look at Demi Moore's outfit and you go, I see it now.
Yes, the concept was clear on the page, but something got lost in translation. I think it's because it was a sequin dress. It wasn't the kind of shiny woven fabric that we associate with ties. Also, I think for the concept to work, the bodice needed to be a little puffier if that was supposed to be the part of the tie where it's knotted.
There's also in Demi Moore's Instagram post about the Met Gala, there's one shot that appears almost from above, which also aids the optical illusion of it looking like a tie. Looking at her ensemble head on, it's hard to see the illusion of a tie.
We neglected to mention the fact that Sarah Jessica Parker was nowhere to be found.
We for sure thought that she would be there. The fact that she is a frequent guest of the Met Gala, the fact that And Just Like That will be premiering in 2 weeks. We thought that she would be a shoe-in, but I guess she was a shoe-out.
Yeah, I wonder what the reasoning is, because it does seem like, timing-wise, this would be a logical way to start the And Just Like That season 3 promotion. But I also think that, like, Sarah Jessica Parker is, like, someone that really wants to be of the people, and maybe she did realize, like, this could be giving Eat the Rich vibes this year, and I want no part in that. Because it's not as if she wasn't in town or had a conflict or something, and she usually never misses the Met Gala.
We have no access to Sarah Jessica Parker, but if we did, we would ask her why she was not at the Met Gala.
It's really sad that HBO doesn't just buy a whole table for the And Just Like That crew. It's only like $350,000. It seems like that would be a worthwhile investment. Like if Ryan Murphy can do that for the cast of Pose.
Yeah, throw Nathan Fielder in there.
I think it's fine that SJP sat this one out. But you know who really should have been there that wasn't?
Who?
Grace Jones. Isn't that crazy? Like that's who Aaliyah or Saint Laurent should have dressed. Like she actually likes wearing menswear by choice.
Well, now I'm scared to be like, and no one even referenced Grace Jones, but I'm scared that a fuckhead's gonna be like, how could you have not seen so-and-so?
I don't know if there are so many literal Grace Jones references, but even someone like Janelle Monáe, the lineage is certainly there.
I wanna give you kudos, Chelsea, for not taking the internet rage bait and correctly noting that you had doubts that Lisa from Blackpink's Vuitton bodysuit was representative of Rosa Parks' face on her crotch area.
Yes, Henry Taylor, the artist that designed these pieces in collaboration with Louis Vuitton, confirmed that the face was his neighbor. He said that all of the images used in the Louis Vuitton collaborations were from existing artworks of family and friends. So all those think pieces, a tad premature,
Do you want to be first or do you want to get it right? We wanted to be first, and therefore we have no choice but to be doing corrections and omissions the following week.
The cut really did Lisa dirty with that headline, which was, is that really Rosa Parks on Lisa's crotch? Like, that is engineered for outrage. The only thing worse would be, like, is that Harriet Tubman on Kourtney Kardashian's G-string?
I mean, to be fair, they left the door open. The answer could have been yes or no.
True.
I think in more upsetting news to us personally, learning that we were wrong and that Nicole Kidman was indeed wearing a wig to the Met Gala.
It looks like realistic hair, but in the close-ups, you can see the lace front on her wig.
I just assume that she has incredibly short hair if she's wearing all of those wigs. But if not, then what is going on underneath there?
I know.
I think we could sell this documentary to Netflix.
Also, we were lamenting at the lack of Christopher John Rogers, but he did dress Ego Wodum and Lauren Santo Domingo. And Lauren Santo Domingo's outfit was one of the chicest things I've ever seen, truly.
If we can't get press credentials for the Met Gala, I beg for Vogue to start putting outfit credits.
It's truly crazy because they know in advance what everyone is wearing. But even on Vogue.com, like, they always do a post that's like every outfit at the Met Gala. Basically, they don't give designer credits in that gallery. They always do in their best dressed picks, but that's a much smaller group of people.
Which then forces us to triangulate between Vogue, Women's Wear Daily, and then other random outlets to figure out who's wearing what.
Truly, we need a press release that just goes out to everyone the second that Rihanna leaves the red carpet. That's like, this is who designed what. And also, this was the inspiration. Because now there's so much lore attached to every single outfit that these people wear.
Vogue, if you would like to do a collaboration with us, we will happily do this grunt work for you. Just please give us access to it. This summer, don't let thinning hair hold you back. With Nutrafol, see visibly less hair shedding and show up where it matters most. Whether you're dancing at a wedding, lounging on the beach, or posing for a quick picture on a night out with friends. You may have heard of Nutrafol's hair growth supplements and wondered, do they actually work? It's a fair question. Many hair supplements overpromise and underdeliver, but Nutrafol is different. As the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, it's trusted by over 1.5 million people and is clinically tested to deliver real results in just 3 to 6 months. Over the years, Nutrafol has really helped me with my own hair shedding, and I plan to use their postpartum formula after I give birth. And that's what I love about Nutrafol. They have multiple formulas designed to give your body what it needs to grow and support your hair's unique needs. Whether you're navigating postpartum, menopause, a plant-based lifestyle, or simply looking to see less hair shedding, Nutrafol has you covered. Adding Nutrafol to your routine is easy and no prescription is needed. Order online with free shipping and automated deliveries. This summer, stop worrying about your hair and start making memories. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter promo code OUTFIT. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code OUTFIT.
Okay, what else do we need to talk about?
Obviously, we need to get into the La Roche, Zendaya versus Anna Sawai of it all. We were partially incorrect. Zendaya's outfit was also, in addition to being inspired by Bianca Jagger, was of course inspired by Diana Ross in Mahogany.
Okay, but she literally does not wear a tuxedo in that movie. I want to push back on that a little bit. I think it's more an homage to how Diana Ross dressed in the 70s in a more general way. The hat is mahogany, sure. Although it wasn't white and mahogany. It was like a buttercream type color. But also, Diana Ross did wear a tuxedo to the Oscars around that same time. So very much in keeping with her look. Although I just want to clarify, not so much as a literal mahogany costuming reference.
And just to take people behind the curtain a little bit, we have extensive notes, and that was something that was in both of our notes, But just sometimes in the conversation, we kind of gloss over stuff and it's hard to get back to that.
We did not intentionally commit Diana Ross erasure is basically what we're saying.
Or Mahogany erasure. We have talked about that film. I believe we did an episode a couple years ago about the best fashion films or fashion design in films.
No, it was films about fashion designers.
There we go. And also, I know people have pushed back on us of like, Anna Sawai wasn't inspired by Yoko Ono. Zendaya wasn't inspired by Bianca Jagger. I'm just going to drop in this clip from the man himself saying what the references were.
Two people paying homage to two different people, you know, Yoko being Anna's inspiration and Diana and Bianca being ours.
So there you have it. Okay, this is a funny correction. I guess Gustav Witzøe, the Norwegian fish farming billionaire, is actually not gay. He has an American wife and children.
And thank you. Are more than handful of Norwegian fuckettes. I really did not expect to have so many Norwegian listeners leave comments, slide into our DMs to tell us that, no, they do not fuck with him. I should have stepped in and said that we do have our own gay billionaires, most notably Tim Cook and Peter Thiel.
Yeah, I can't believe we forgot about Peter Thiel. He gave us PayPal, but took away Gawker.
Indeed.
You win some, you lose some. Also, Barry Diller, a bi billionaire, although he wasn't technically out when we recorded last week's episode.
And what a lovely transition, Chelsea. American businessman, creator of the TV movie and TV miniseries, founder of Fox Television Network, and most importantly, husband of Diane von Furstenberg, Barry Diller, confirmed in his new memoir, Who Knew?, something that has long been speculated, which is he is a gay man. However, what we didn't know is that his marriage to Furstenberg is not a lavender marriage, and they are indeed lovers.
Okay, so therefore he's not gay, he's bi.
He does not define things as such.
Well, he doesn't use any words to describe his sexuality. He's just very upfront about the fact that he was always with men, like from when he was a teenager. He meets Diane in the 70s. They date for quite some time. They break up because Diane fucks Richard Gere circa American Gigolo, so fair.
We should say that we are getting this information because New York Magazine released an excerpt from his memoir that just came out this past Tuesday, where he talks about his love affair with Diane. I should add context that not only was it insulting that Diane von Furstenberg cheated on him with Richard Gere while he was making American Gigolo, he was also the head of Paramount, which was making American Gigolo at the time.
Yeah, that's very embarrassing. I totally get it. So they break up and then they come back together years later and end up getting married in 2001. And they've been married ever since, married but living in separate apartments. He said that Diane is the only woman he's ever been intimate with. And otherwise, he's been with guys. So it's like, I don't think that means he's gay, which is what literally everyone is saying. It's sad because I feel like he's justifying this as if he's like the only person that's ever had sex with men and women.
To speak for my heterosexual ladies, I do worry that this is now going to be the new straight single ladies white whale. Like, you know, Carrie and Sex and the City brought about, like, I can make an emotionally unavailable man emotionally available to me, right? The Mr. Big love story. I feel like for millennials, it's like, I got the poly guy to be monogamous with me. Now the new flex is going to be like, oh, my husband? Well, yes, he's gay, but he's only straight for me. He's only attracted to me.
Yes, I turned my Equinox trainer and now he's my husband. It's also crazy, and I think it really speaks to different attitudes towards bisexuality with men and women, because Diane von Furstenberg has also had relationships and had sex with women, which was discussed in the documentary that came out last year that we talked about.
They're just fluid.
No one's calling her a lesbian because of that.
Do you want to claim her for the team?
I claim her as a queer woman, but it's cool. Neither of them seem very interested in labels. Although I think because they never use those labels, then people sort of ascribe maybe labels that are incorrect to them.
Now I just want a conversation between Barry Diller and JoJo Siwa about their fluid sexuality. Chelsea, I have a question for you. What are you doing September 18th, 2026? Do you have any plans?
I do now.
That's right. We got a teaser for Practical Magic 2. Does it feature any of the actresses? Sort of. It features their voices saying this.
Tooth of Wolf and Morning Dew. Something old and something new. Let the spell begin to mix. September 18th, 2026.
A teaser before they've even begun filming is wild. I mean, I'm here for it.
I'm here for it too. It got me so excited.
I was going to say now I have something to live for until... But I suppose it would be my child. I should probably say that.
Something else to live for.
You know what, Chell? I want to see Practical Magic 2 in 4DX.
Oh, I'm down for that.
I've been telling Chelsea about this 4DX experience because truly the things that I've missed most in my pregnancy is sushi and the ability to see movies in 4DX. And 4DX is essentially being on like a roller coaster. The seats move based on the action. There's like a tickler option. There's mist and fog. And I think Practical Magic 2 would be very fun to experience that way.
I agree. I just can't believe this is happening because no one was talking about making a Practical Magic sequel in 1999. Like, it kind of came and went. It always had an audience, but it's not like it was this huge smash hit at the time. The same was true of Hocus Pocus. It was like a slow burning sort of thing. And I think this speaks to the fact that we just need more witch movies, more sort of light and fluffy witch movies. Like, I loved The Witch, but that was scary as fuck.
Vampires are back in fashion. Zombies are now back in fashion. Give us some witches.
Give us some just warm and fuzzy witches.
Will this film be in theaters next year, or will it be on Max, or should I say HBO Max?
Oh my God. Waking up to that was crazy.
In a move no one or everyone saw coming, Warner Brothers Discovery has changed their streaming service name back to HBO Max. Hallelujah.
I never could find it in my heart to delete the HBO Max app from my smart TV, so I've just been letting it chill down there all this time.
Oh, Chelsea, I have HBO Go. I have HBO Now, I think. Yeah, and I never deleted HBO Max. Is our Max app going to become HBO Max?
We're about to find out, but you know what? Good. They needed to do this. It was confusing.
I have to imagine that this choice was made by a singular man at Warner Brothers who did not look at the research data at all, just thought this was a good idea. And that man was fired last week. And the first thing they did after he was fired was switch it back to HBO Max. Or else why? Why now?
It's pretty crazy.
The amount of montages that HBO itself has posted on social media of their own stars, from Colin Farrell to Jean Smart to the cast of House of Dragon, literally not remembering that it is Max, is astounding.
See, I liked the fact that their rollout strategy for this rebrand was very self-deprecating, but you did not enjoy this.
Yes, it's very clear that the various social media managers have saved all of the memes about this for like the last 6 months or year, however long the reign of terror of Max has been. But yeah, I was just sort of like, why? Why do you get to have a sense of humor about this? You're the ones that did this to us. Whether you work from home and never know what to put on, or you're just not in love with anything when you open up your closet, it's time to find clothes that work for your life right now, whatever phase you're in. Splendid has cozy, stylish, timeless pieces you'll actually be excited to wear. This may come as a surprise to some, but I love Splendid. My mom loves Splendid, and guess what? Baby Morty will love Splendid because my mom and I have both gotten him little outfits from Splendid. I've been putting together a postpartum capsule collection of sorts, and Splendid has everything I'm looking for my maternity leave. Think buttery soft tees, pull-on pants that fit just right, easy sets, sweaters for every season, and so much more. Their pieces are next level soft and actually hold up in the wash. Right now, Splendid is offering our listeners 20% off when you go to splendid.com and use promo code OUTFIT at checkout, or when you shop at Splendid in stores. And even better, the promo code is stackable with other promotions. Go to splendid.com and use code OUTFIT for 20% 20% off online or in store. That's splendid.com, promo code outfit. We got our first taste of Ryan Murphy's latest creation, the Kim Kardashian Laura Wasser inspired law show, All's Fair. And I'm in too.
This show looks crazy.
Well, the trailer presents a show that asks aging millennials a question, which is, do you want a show that's like the first Wives Club with the narrative impulses of Nip Tuck?
But it also looks very nighttime soap opera, like in a Dynasty kind of way. Also, the use of Cell Block Tango in the trailer is genius and clearly just baiting gay audiences. That and the presence of Glenn Close.
I would say that there's several camp dog whistles, like the fact that their first client seems to be Elizabeth Berkley of First Wives Club and Showgirls fame. I have seen people freak out that Kim Kardashian has top billing over Naomi Watts and Glenn Close. And I just want to say, like, that wasn't a mistake. Those are things that are contractually negotiated way ahead of time. And I'm sorry, but Ryan Murphy, for better or worse, built this show around Kim Kardashian.
She's also a producer. Kris Jenner is a producer on this show. Also, I screamed when I saw that their law offices literally look like Kim's house in Calabasas.
It's giving beige.
It's like a minimalist monastery.
I mean, look, if I'm divorcing my husband, that's the vibe I want.
I also think it's really interesting that Kim has been in Paris this week because when she got robbed, held at gunpoint all those years ago, this is somehow only going to trial now in France.
To be fair, I think they caught the guys only a few years ago. It did take several years for them to find all the guys that robbed Kim, but we are still unpacking the confusing French law system that we first experienced in Anatomy of a Fall.
Seriously. But I saw the paparazzi photos of her and Chris around Paris, and I was like, this looks like the costuming for All's Fair. This is not how they usually dress.
Chris's hair, that kind of long bob but with like flipped out at the bottom, is exactly how Kim's hair is in the All's Fair trailer.
In the All's Fair trailer, also, we see Kim like with a straight tie and a suit jacket, very much not her style. And that is how Chris is dressing. Although I just want to touch upon this for a second, because this whole straight women wearing straight ties epidemic has gotten completely out of hand.
I sort of feel like this is a curse, and I feel like we may have started it, because years ago we had a post, I believe, showing a Miranda outfit where she's wearing a straight tie, and we're like, straight women don't wear straight ties, which we got a lot of pushback from women, and now, like, 7 years later, this is the go-to style.
7 years later, it's actually finally become a trend, which is fine. And you know what? Some girls, like, if you're the kind of girl that can carry off a lot of fashion and are like super hot, like, sure, do it. But most people, this looks crazy on, especially if you're not like butch in any way or androgynous in any way, I guess.
Well, what I find funny is in the All's Fair trailer, that seems to be the go-to style for Kim, Naomi Watts in one scene, Niecy Nash. I don't know if you clock this. I believe Sarah Paulson, I caught a glimpse of Sarah Paulson engaging in simulated heterosexual sex in the trailer, which to me says recession indicator.
You know what? I actually don't mind the ties on Kris Jenner, because she has the prerequisite short hair. You know, it's like, if you're going to do the look, like, do the look.
There's also something to, and I'll call it costuming of Kris Jenner and the costumes in All's Fair, that, you know, I feel like we need to give Paula Poundstone her due. The color palette, the ties, the hair, it all comes back to her.
It does. She is an icon, truly.
So I guess that's my hope for All's Fair, is that Paula Poundstone is a client in one episode. I have good news. The long-awaited Madonna biopic has been resurrected as a potential limited series for Netflix. If you remember, during the pandemic, Universal Studios announced Madonna co-wrote and would be directing a biopic about her own life, and Julia Garner was set to star. That fell apart. Several years went by, and we've learned that Sean Levy's production company, 21 Laps, is working with Madonna to bring this project back to life. According to Deadline, the duo has been discussing the project for a while, but they are starting from scratch. So this limited series could go through Madonna's entire life. I believe the biopic that was set up at Universal was like from when she gets to New York to the Blonde Ambition tour. Now, I thought this would be news that would delight Chelsea, but I think you discovered in researching this story something truly shocking about Sean Levy, which is...
He's not gay. He's married. He has 4 kids. And he's directed and produced some of the worst movies I've ever seen.
To be fair, his company is the production company behind Stranger Things.
Oh, and just because that's also said in the 80s, he's qualified to do the Madonna biopic.
So your feeling is that we need a gay person at the helm of this.
I think we need a gay man, or we need a woman. We just need someone cool. Like, I feel like this is going to be cheesy.
Yes, you were none too happy when I told you that his latest film was Deadpool versus Wolverine.
Like, that is absolutely the wrong person.
To be fair, he's just producing it, so he might not be the director behind it, but you need a very strong personality to work with Madonna about her own life. I mean, the fact that the only way we were previously going to get a Madonna biopic was if she wrote and directed it scares me a little bit.
Oh, for sure. I don't know. It's so hard because Madonna has had such an interesting life. There are so many eras of Madonna. It's too much, frankly, for a feature-length film, unless it's isolated to one time period. I think I would pick the pre-fame Madonna, maybe into Like a Virgin era or something like that, when people started dressing like her.
Maybe culminating in her wedding with Sean Penn.
It's a lot, though. Because I think if you focus on Madonna's early years, it could be more of a just kids meets Slaves of New York kind of ordeal, which I think would be cool. Or you could do something that's ping-ponging between different time periods like Judy did, where it's like, okay, we have Judy like right before she died and then Judy while she's filming Wizard of Oz.
Do you remember, I think it was an HBO movie that was about Marilyn Monroe where it was like Norma Jean and Marilyn?
Yes.
One actress played Norma Jean and one actress, I think Mira Sorvino, played Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to do that. I think the only way to do this, if we're doing multiple eras of Madonna, different actresses for every era.
It could be kind of like The Hours if all of those different plot lines were about the same person.
Absolutely, because even when Julia Garner was cast as Madonna, it is perfect casting, but for a very particular time and place of Madonna, which is 89 to 92 Madonna. Which is why I think you need a different actress for early Madonna. Maybe you can plug Julia Garner back in.
Like Sophie Thatcher from Yellow Jackets or something to be young, young Madonna. And then Jessica Lange to be present day Madonna.
Oh no, I think Madonna would be present day Madonna. But that would be cool if you could have Madonna and then Debbie Mazur play themselves. Like in this modern time, and then we like cut it back to the 80s.
Yeah, there are so many ways that you could approach this, but I'm just scared that this is going to be like the Madonna version of like a Bohemian Rhapsody or the Elton John one. The Elton John one was actually kind of okay.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
All right, Chell. Time to use our business credit card points to buy some Hollywood Foreign Press members' Rolexes. because the Golden Globes will be adding a podcast category to next year's show.
Wow.
The president of the Golden Globes, a woman named, and I know we're not great at pronunciations, but I'm just going to tell you what her last name is. Helen Honey? H-O-E-H-N-E?
Sure.
Said in a statement, as the world of entertainment continues to evolve, we are excited to recognize new forms of storytelling. Podcasts have emerged as a profound medium for sharing narratives and building communities across global borders and generations. Don't we know it, Chell?
Okay, so who's going to be nominated, though? Because if it's actually the most popular podcast, that's what? Joe Rogan, Alex Cooper, The Daily.
Before, lovely fuckettes, you get your hopes up. There's no way in hell that Chelsea or I's podcast will be nominated because they will be spotlighting audio and video podcasts that have made a significant impact over the past year, which is defined as the 25 most popular podcasts. And then from there, six finalists will be named. But my question is, what charts are we looking at? Because I looked at the Spotify chart and it yields different results than the Apple charts.
I think Apple is the standard. Apple has a higher listenership.
I'm glad to hear that because if we're going by the Spotify chart, then it would mean that Joe Rogan, Bill Maher, Theo Vaughn, Crime Junkie, Amy Poehler, and Dax Shepard would be nominated. I mean, let's be honest here. This award is just to capture all of the actors and presenters that left the industry as a whole and went to podcasting.
Yeah, it makes sense that it would be Amy Poehler, Dax Shepard, Conan, all of the celebrity podcasts.
Did you enjoy this person on network television in the early 2000s? Well, guess what? They have a podcast now. And it's wildly popular.
Shall we get into Cannes?
The Cannes Film Festival is going on now, and what the hell? They have new red carpet rules. How dare they?
Well, they first pissed people off years ago because they required women to wear quote unquote like glamorous shoes or something that suggested that flats weren't okay.
Right, which Kristen Stewart in 2018 did a slight protest against because she took off her heels when she went up the Palais stairs.
Right, and some indigenous guy who wore moccasins to his film about indigenous culture like wasn't allowed to go in. So there's a whole controversy around that also.
Just days before the Cannes Film Festival was set to start, they updated their charter, which I didn't even know the Cannes Film Festival had a charter. But evidently they do, and they updated their red carpet dress code that banned full nudity and voluminous ensembles. For decency reasons, nudity is prohibited on the red carpet as well as in any other area of the festival. Voluminous outfits, in particular those with a large train that hinder the proper flow of traffic of guests and complicate seating in the theater, are not permitted. It goes on to say that if the festival welcoming teams catch you violating these rules, then they won't let you on the red carpet.
So they're basically banning people from serving.
The Cannes Film Festival is one of the most well-regarded film festivals in the world, but I do just want to note that it's a made-up festival. Like, literally, the French Tourism Board wanted to bring people to the south of France ahead of the vacationing season, so they came up with this film festival, and within that has always been attention-seeking celebrities and nude outfits. So I don't understand why in the year 2025 we're banning it.
Yeah, why is this a problem? It's literally what I associate with Cannes fashion is giant gowns and tits and VPLs and stuff of that nature.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the most iconic red carpet Cannes moment is Cicciolina with her tits out. Our hearts go out to the stylists who have spent weeks, if not months, prepping these celebrities' outfits who now completely have to get new outfits from them. Because I saw this tweet that was like, we have our first red carpet casualty, because I guess Halle Berry was supposed to wear a much more revealing outfit and then had to ditch that for a different dress. However, if she was going to rewear her Met Gala gown, then maybe that's for the best.
Yeah, see, I feel like putting your tits out is a way of honoring and respecting French culture. Like, when in Cannes, you know?
Too distracting.
Well, we'll see what happens, because I think that it is likely that this will be enforced for some people, but not others. Because you also have to take into consideration that Cannes, in addition to being a film festival, it is also essentially a brand activation for a lot of jewelry companies and a lot of makeup companies that have their brand ambassadors. And it's a very like spawn oriented thing.
I have a hard time seeing them denying Bella Hadid onto the red carpet.
They'll deny some random influencer. But when it's someone major, they'll let it slide. That would be my prediction.
Well, I look forward to reporting on anyone who got fashion policed by the Cannes Film Festival.
See, if anyone does, they'll get way too much attention. Like, this actually doesn't benefit Cannes in any way.
I feel like Julia Fox saw this news story and then immediately booked a ticket to Nice.
Well, it's like you can still wear a slutty bodysuit. You just can't wear a big train or have your tits out. You could literally wear a bra and panties, though.
To be fair, the banning of a voluminous train, not the worst idea.
Yeah, true, because they just get bigger and bigger every year.
That is a ritualistic torture only befitting for a Saw movie, making these actresses walk in 6-inch heels in a long train up the palace stairs.
True, true.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I think we've said it all about Hollywood news. I know that there is some New York news that we're kind of late on. Shall we get into this New York Magazine incredibly divisive West Village Girl article?
Yes, friend of the pod Brock Collier wrote a cover story for New York Magazine titled "It Must Be Nice to Be a West Village Girl" about the rise of basic girls and basic culture in the West Village. Not to sound like a West Village girl, but I was literally so traumatized reading this article. Like, I left New York in 2016, and obviously there were a lot of basic girls living in the West Village then, but now it seems as if it has reached epidemic proportions, and perhaps because of TikTok, we're seeing more of them and their culture and the way they live.
This is quite a banger New York Magazine issue, because this issue also features the expose about John Fetterman not being in his right mind, but it's the West Village girls that get the cover story. To give context to people who haven't read the article, these women, as described by Brock, they move through the neighborhood in packs, wearing the local uniform, a white tank, light wash, jeans, and sambas, an iced matcha latte in hand and hair slicked back into a tight ponytail. It was chilly, so several of them were also wearing the Aritzia Super Puffs.
Yeah, they have a little uniform.
But Chelsea, they're not all apolitical. This is my other favorite part of the article, where some girl is quoted as, "You can have a Cartier love bracelet and still care about immigrants' rights."
That is the best thing ever. Of course, that's true, but to state that so plainly is very funny. It also does feel like a bastardized version of the Madonna quote, "You can be a spiritual person and still go shopping at Prada," or whatever she said in the Ray of Light era.
True enough. I think what was shocking for me, and maybe you feel the same way because we lived in New York around the same time, is at least when I moved to New York in 2006, the West Village was unattainable. Everyone was looking to Brooklyn and Queens, and that's kind of where the cool neighborhoods were developing. For me, it was certainly shocking a couple years ago to discover that Dime Square was the new hip neighborhood of like, oh, I didn't realize we were making cool neighborhoods in Manhattan again. And then to learn that, like, the West Village has been readopted by a younger generation, I just didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I think we should also clarify that these girls, they're all in their early 20s. They all work in finance or marketing, or in many or perhaps most instances are subsidized by their parents, because to rent a studio or a one bedroom in the West Village is about $7,000 a month, which is insane.
as described, a dingy one bedroom goes for $7,000. When I was in college, I was very, very lucky. My parents helped me get into an apartment, but like, they had East Village money, not West Village money. And that was during the financial crisis. I was able to live in the East Village. Like, this is insanity.
The West Village has always been the grail. Like, if I could afford a spacious two-bedroom in the West Village, I would not live in LA. I live in LA because I can rent a house for less than they are paying in rent.
I think the other reason that we wanted to talk about this is a lot of what's going on in the West Village currently has its DNA in Sex and the City, as Brock goes on to write. If Sex and the City washed out the last of the neighborhood's bohemians 2 decades ago and turned the West Village into a celebrity playground where real adults with real incomes live, the pandemic turned it into something else entirely, a bustling sorority house. I think that's what makes it different. Because as this article points out, I always associated the West Village with like Gen X parents with money.
That is who lived there. And boomers.
And boomers who had been living there forever, yes.
Yes, I counted. There were 7 references to Sex and the City in this article and 2 references to Sarah Jessica Parker specifically because she famously lives in the West Village and she also had her SJP collection store on Bleecker Street in the old Marc Jacobs space. But it's funny because these girls, like, they don't even know who she is or watch Sex and the City. Yet they are there because of the lineage of Sex and the City. And I think Brock does a really good job of explaining the fact that this is a neighborhood that historically has been full of a lot of creative types and a lot of gay people. But in the 90s, it became a place where a lot of fashion industry people lived, a lot of it girls. Lucy Sykes and Bonnie Morrison are quoted in this article. And because it became sort of a fashion-y hotspot, that's naturally the world where Carrie would live, even though she was supposed to live on the Upper East Side.
I guess my question to you is, has the It Girl been rebranded? And are we just too old for what is qualified as an It Girl these days? Because a big point of the article is how basic these women are. And there's even a quote where one of them says, basic isn't a bad thing.
Well, these are not It Girls in any sense.
In TikTok, they are.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean they're cool. The sad thing is that straight young women who have historically lived in this neighborhood, it's like they are the Carrie Bradshaw types that live in shitty, tiny studio apartments but spend all of their money on clothes. These bitches don't even spend all of their money on clothes. They don't even look good. Yet they have $7,000 to spend on rent.
Well, I think this is what those that have lived in the neighborhood for a long time, the kind of the Gen X women are commenting on of like, we used to behave badly and party. These girls are uninterested in any of that. Like, I think what makes this different is that there is just this wellness vibe that kind of permeates all of this, even though they're exclusively like, all these girls want to do is drink espresso martinis or Aperol spritzes or matcha lattes or that new matcha rose latte and vape.
The saddest part of this article to me was when they talked to, I believe, the owner of Cowgirl. Cowgirl is the restaurant that was on Sex and the City. It was the restaurant where Steve and Aiden were hanging out with their girlfriends when Miranda and Carrie just stumbled upon them. They have had to repurpose one of their frozen margarita machines and make it a frozen espresso martini machine.
The owner referred to it as the new cocaine. I wanted to talk about this with you because we used to go to Cowgirl all of the time. When we would first come back to New York after we started the account and we would want to get together with friends, we specifically picked Cowgirl because we were like, where else can we get a table for 10?
Cowgirl is great for that reason. Also, proximity to all the best bars. And it's not that expensive. A lot of restaurants in the West Village, especially if it's like a large party, are so fucking expensive right now and have wait lists and all of that shit.
But the idea that all of these 20-something-year-old girls are infiltrating Cowgirl, it blows my mind. Look, I'm glad that their patronage will allow for Cowgirl to still exist, but it's just, that restaurant was empty. Again, I mean, this phenomenon's going on in LA with Barney's Beanery, where it's like, that was not a cool place when I was growing up.
Well, same with Saddle Ranch. Saddle Ranch is the cowgirl of Los Angeles. It's so crazy. And Brock also mentions the crumble cookie, which is really a descendant of the Magnolia cupcake.
Yes.
The funny thing about this is that, like, this is Sex and the City's fault. It's never explicitly stated, but it's touched upon. Sex and the City changed this neighborhood, as well as the meatpacking district, etc. This part of New York, it sold this very specific kind of New York fantasy. But the legacy of that is these girls who probably pass Sarah Jessica Parker on the street and don't think anything of it. So she can live anonymously in the West Village, finally.
Yeah, my favorite part of the article is when one of these Gen X women who's lived in the West Village forever goes kind of West Village Karen and walks by the Carrie Bradshaw Perry Street stoop and says to these wannabe influencers, "Excuse me, is that your property? Because this is actually trespassing." We did get an update that the owner was indeed granted permission to install their gate so that they can deter these influencers from trying to take photos on the stoop.
Good for him.
But then there's this parenthetical in the New York Magazine article that says, TikTok is filled with recommendations of other neighborhood backdrops to take photos in front of if you get shooed away from this one. Very dark.
Yeah, this article made me really sad. It was entertaining, but it saddened me.
Which I feel like this article goes hand in hand with Lena Dunham's recent essay, would we call it? Article?
I'd say essay for The New Yorker.
Which basically gets into how growing up in New York traumatized her so much that she can no longer live there. This predates the West Village girl.
She was out well before that really, really popped off. Or well before TikTok, I suppose. I really loved this. I related to it in a lot of ways. And it's not as if Lena Dunham is some outsider who is coming in and shitting on the greatest city in the world. She was born there. She gets to hate it if she wants to. But what she describes isn't really a hatred of New York so much as anxiety. And I totally get that. New York is not a good place for anxious people. It's a really bad place, in fact. You have to have a certain level of stamina to be able to deal with all of that.
She basically, in the piece, goes on to list how every street corner, essentially, she has some traumatic memory attached to, such as, she says, "I also hated Central Park, though we rarely went, because during a class trip, I'd seen an ailing pigeon laboring through its final breaths, sitting atop what looked to be a nest of its own intestines. I promptly threw up in the bushes near Strawberry Fields. I liked the local park on Thompson and Spring until one day I entered a plastic tube on the jungle gym to find a bald-headed man on his belly reaching his arms out towards me. I hated St. Mark's Place because I had seen a handsome young man asleep on a stoop with a needle in his neck." And it goes on and on, including nowhere is safe, Chelsea, not even her mother's apartment where she once opened the door to go to school and saw a man about to defecate on her mother's front steps.
She also shouts out two of my least favorite parts of New York, Canal Street, and specifically the smell of rotting fish on a hot day. A nightmare, especially if you're hungover. Also, the communal dressing room at Century 21.
Ooh, yeah. Horrifying.
I don't know if that still exists, but no one has good memories there.
This is akin to, I know you don't shop at Aritzia, but the Aritzia stores have no mirrors in their dressing rooms. So, like, you have a private dressing room, but if you want to see if what this piece looks like on you, you have to go out.
That's so cruel.
Absolutely.
It's like, let me look ugly in private.
For me, they've been great for non-maternity, maternity stuff. And I was trying on something that was too large for me, purposefully so. The salesperson was like, "Hi, honey, let me get you a smaller size." And I was like, "I'm pregnant. This is perfect." And she, like, just scurried away.
I think this line from Lena Dunham's essay really says it all. The issue isn't that New Yorkers leer, jeer, curse, and shit in public. It's that the city's messy scrum was a poor fit for a chronically ill child with obsessive compulsive tendencies. Seems like a really bad place for someone like that.
She also, I might bastardize this, but she makes this point that it's different being born there versus coming there for college in the way that we did, in the sense that there is a sort of bargain that we made where we knew how tough and gross it is, that when you're born into New York City, you don't get to make that same conscious decision.
She says that the choice was made for her by her parents.
and more so her mother, who she at one point refers to her mother's true lover, New York. Because there was an attempt to move up to Connecticut. Lena Dunham gets into this point towards the end of this essay that, you know, because she wrote the show Girls, she has been saddled with this idea that she's a New York girl and she hates the city.
Yeah, she describes coming back to New York after 2 years of being overseas during the pandemic and basically like having a panic attack in the cab line at JFK, which I get. It is really intense.
Who among us hasn't had a mentee be while waiting for a taxi at JFK? One of the reasons that Lena Dunham no longer lives in New York is because an assignment brought her to London. I think it was the show Industry at first. And now she married a British man, lives there. And in true Lena Dunham fashion, has written a show, a slightly fictionalized version of her current life called Too Much, which will premiere on Netflix. And we got the first images for the show.
It's premiering on Netflix soon. It's in July, right?
July 10th.
Thank God. I didn't think that we were going to get this so soon.
I guess the most startling thing for me looking at these images is that Meg Statler, who is, let's be honest, a version of Lena Dunham in the show, has like a fucked up dog.
Well, Lena Dunham has a fucked up dog.
That's what I'm saying, though. I didn't think that art would imitate life that exactly.
Well, I can't wait. And we'll truly have so much going on this summer between Too Much and Just Like That, which we're exactly 2 weeks away from. Lauren's just shaking her head. Okay, what else?
Well, in news that's near and dear to my heart and some of the other fuckettes' hearts is the news that The Real Housewives of New York has been canceled. Or has it? The side of the internet I care about went crazy last week because Bravo posted their upcoming Real Housewives schedule and The Real Housewives of New York was not listed on that schedule. So people assume that the show has been canceled. But Andy Cohen recently clarified on his SiriusXM talk show that they are simply in between seasons and that they are doing a complete casting overhaul. Now, it should be noted, Chell, there are Real Housewives franchises that have been put on pause. I believe Miami aired until 2015 and didn't come back until 2021. And I hope they take their time with this casting process because other than Jenna Lyons, this season has been rough.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't finish it.
If a season's bad, I sometimes just skip to the reunion just to see the good stuff.
See, I just don't like all of the petty little fights. I don't care about them. I don't even think it's campy. It's just boring to me.
So this is my hot take that I've shared with friend of the show, Evan Ross Katz, and our friend Maya off mic. But I feel like it's time to share my hot take, which is I think we might be beyond the Real Housewives franchise. And what I mean by that is the golden era of the Real Housewives, it intertwined with a lot of real life stuff that just happened to be captured by the cameras. You have Teresa going to prison. You have Kyle Richards realizing her sister Kim has fallen off of the wagon while they're shooting the first season. You have Erica Jane's husband going to prison. We benefited from that as viewers, but because that stuff isn't happening, or because those people saw the damage it did on their actual personal lives, they won't allow it to ever get that real again. So we have this manufactured bullshit. Also, my issue with these rebooted casts and the newer casts is, I'm sorry, you can't have people Chelsea and I's age being housewives. Because we have grown up on reality television. I think we all have an inherent reality television brain. And you can see these women, and you see it on The Real Housewives of New York. I feel like you see it in Dubai, where you see them producing or trying to engineer the show. I need a 57-year-old woman who doesn't understand what she's doing or saying.
If anything, we need to go older than that.
Oh, you want like a 70-year-old.
They probably haven't watched reality TV to the extent that 50-year-olds have.
So you want to do the advanced style version of Real Housewives.
Yeah, let's skew older.
And I'm into this.
Just a thought.
Yeah, unless you're getting Julia Fox, then you are absolutely correct. Let's get some octogenarians in these shows.
So shall we move to television?
it's not typical for us, beyond it just like that, to be talking about television shows week to week, but truly the last 2 weeks of the rehearsal have been the craziest stuff I've ever seen in my life. We have to discuss.
I know, although I saw some tweet that said something to the effect of, like, describing the rehearsal to people who haven't seen it makes you sound crazy.
What I love about the rehearsal is the fact that it goes off on so many tangents that I have forgotten what the original premise of this season is. Which I guess is to reduce the amount of plane crashes that happen, but I've been very distracted.
I don't know. The more we get to know these real life pilots that are featured on the show, the more scared I am to fly.
Oh, yeah. I'm so thankful our tour was last year and not this year.
It's actually really, really terrifying. But I think we wanted to circle back with the rehearsal specifically because of episode 3, which was one of the most incredible television moments in history, I think. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before.
For those who have not seen it or don't care about watching the season of the rehearsal, Nathan Fielder decides to dissect one of the most famous, I would say, pilots of the last 20 years, Sully Sullenberg. One of the rare pilots who actually asked his second in command what they should do before safely landing the plane on the Hudson.
Were you in New York then?
It's 2011. Yeah, I was in New York then.
Because that's one of those moments where I remember where I was when the plane crashed in the Hudson. I was at the Picture Library. Have you ever been there? In Bryant Park? It's like kitty corner from where Carrie and Big were supposed to get married. Another library. And it's literally just a library of folders of different images that are grouped by theme.
Very nice. This was your photo researcher days.
Yeah, exactly. But that's where I was on that fateful day.
I don't remember, but I remember the general conversation of, like, because we were just 10 years on from 9/11, people being like, I did not like seeing a plane flying that low.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, in true Nathan Fielder fashion, he decides to rehearse Sully Sullenberg's life as told through his memoir to try to understand what made Sully ask that co-pilot a question, unlike so many other captains, which involves Nathan Fielder making himself a baby in maybe the greatest adult baby decorated room I've ever seen in my life.
It was truly magical. I don't think I've laughed that hard ever, maybe. I was, like, hyperventilating watching the baby stuff. It was so disgusting.
Well, yes. Yeah, and he's breastfed by this puppeted, gigantic, grotesque creature where breast milk is just shooting out and basically drowning baby Nathan Fielder.
Yeah, it's very Ari Aster adjacent. I thought the diaper change was the more disturbing part.
I mean, there's a lot of disturbing stuff in that, including, I guess I have to ask, I can't believe I even have to ask this, do we think Nathan Fielder actually masturbated in that cockpit?
I don't know, probably not.
Because there's one part where he's recreating the first time Sully ever flew, and the subtext of the way that Sully Sullenberg writes about it is that he brought a woman that he had a crush on in the plane with him, and he became extremely aroused and pleasured himself. But Nathan Fielder swaps out the actual woman with a puppet.
I don't think Sully actually jerked off on the plane. I think he was just horny on the plane.
Right, but these are the connections that Nathan is making. He reads into that as he probably pleasured himself, which then makes Nathan Fielder pleasure himself. Or did he? I mean, this is the crazy thing about the rehearsal.
Well, I think it speaks to how insane the baby stuff was that people aren't even really talking about the jerking off that much.
I don't know if people are even talking about the baby stuff because the episode comes to a crescendo when it is revealed that Sully loves the song Bring Me to Life by Evanescence. And also the startling revelation that he pieces together that there are 23 seconds of silence from the last time Sully speaks to when he asks his co-pilot the question of what should we do or have any ideas. And that is the exact length of the chorus of Bring Me to Life, which then caused very hilarious edits that I sent you one on TikTok where they took the Tom Hanks Sully movie and then put Evanescence over that sequence.
I did actually see that for some reason. The movie, I mean.
I did too. We talked about this. We love plane crash movies.
This show is just so genius. And conceptually, it's out there. It's really smart. But also visually, it's so appealing looking. Like the way that that adult baby part was executed was very stylish.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the parents on stilts.
It looks so good. It just speaks to a really, really high taste level that's shocking on a show like this.
Yeah, and even the high taste level and trying to recreate something that has a low taste level, like the music competition that happens that we pick up with again in episode 4. Which brings us to this lawsuit that this woman, Lana Love, has brought against Nathan Fielder in the show, saying that she lost $10,000 and feels betrayed because, as she says, I signed up to be a singer, not a lab rat. But I'm so in it with the rehearsal, I'm like, is this a bit?
It could be. I would not be surprised.
Because this woman is alleging that when she auditioned for a music competition show that was to be on HBO, which frankly, red flag number one, called Wings of Voice, red flag number two, she was excited with the opportunity and thought it would be a genuine opportunity. But I saw this lawsuit before I had watched the latest episode. And when you see these singers, which I guess she is featured in this music competition where the judges are pilots, that alarm bells didn't go off. That's why I think it's a bit.
I don't know. I think if you're a contestant on one of these shows, you're there for the potential exposure. And even though this show is clearly not really a show like American Idol or The Voice or whatever, it is still an HBO show. You are still getting that exposure. I don't see what the problem is. If you've decided to participate in one of these shows, you've already opted into something that is extremely humiliating.
I don't know. I'm so excited to see where all of this goes. But the rehearsal makes me so paranoid that I think that everything is a bit.
Yeah, that's not an accident. Question everything, Lauren.
I told you something from the rehearsal subreddit that could be considered a spoiler, but I don't. So if you're watching the rehearsal and don't want to get spoiled, just skip ahead 30 seconds. For those who don't, the subreddit found that there is a commercial pilot license for one Mr. Nathan Fielder. So perhaps this is where the rehearsal is going. He will be getting up on a legitimate commercial airplane and flying it.
Okay, but that scares me because becoming a commercial airline pilot, like surely that's an intense program that takes years, a lot of work, etc. Surely it's not that easy.
We'll find out. Perhaps the series ends with him and Sully in the cockpit together.
Wow.
If Sully Sullenberg does not appear in this series and had no idea that episode 3 was coming, I just love the idea of his grandchildren having to explain this to him because, as you noted in that tweet, impossible to explain.
Shall we move to a show that's easier to wrap one's head around?
The show Hacks. Yes, before we get into it, I just want to thank the lovely fuckettes who DM'd me to prepare me that there was going to be a coyote dog related storyline in the latest episode.
Yeah, what are the odds?
Which I was fully prepared for that corgi to die, and I was pleasantly surprised when it was simply lightly attacked by the coyote.
Isn't a corgi a little too big for a coyote? Like, I don't really worry about my dog because he's almost 90 pounds. Although, should I? Hacks is making me question things.
And again, with Frosty, we don't know if it was a coyote. It could have been a hawk or an eagle. Anyway, enough about that.
I really liked that episode, this week's episode. I think it's one of the best episodes of the show ever.
Well, I just needed the tension to break between Deborah and Ava. Deborah was being too mean to Ava.
I know, I'm so upset when they're fighting on the show, which is most of the time.
I did enjoy Ava's crash out, which reminded me in my lesser moments, where Ava has been trying to befriend the writers team of which she is a boss of and has been paying for their lunches, only to learn that they've been taking advantage of her and ordering way more food, including a $72 Bronzino for the table in case anyone gets hungry.
Okay, but that was a genius, glamorous woman having a nervous breakdown moment. Her whole breakdown was one of the funniest things I've ever seen on that show.
I think it belongs in the pantheon with Julianne Moore and Magnolia.
It does. The Branzino detail was perfect. I think everyone has the fantasy of driving through one of those security gates, like the ones that go up and down, you know, when you're driving in and out of a parking garage or something.
That's triggering something in the back of my brain when I used to watch Mythbusters. I don't think a car can actually get through one of those. I think it was definitely a dummy one.
Okay, don't question the reality of this scene, which was so perfect. Also, I loved when everyone was trying to look for Ava in the aftermath of her breakdown. We have the Paul Downs character and Meg Statler searching the Americana. And then you have Deborah like going up to the like the line in front of the queer line dancing.
At El Cid, yeah.
Showing her photo as if she's a missing person. And that is the most legit LA thing I've ever seen. That is the funniest, realest thing to parody because, guys, queer line dancing has become a big thing here. I have not participated because I hate group dancing, but
I think the biggest sign of love that Deborah showed was going from her home that's clearly in Beverly Hills or Bel Air to the East Side to then go all the way to, I assume, Malibu, jump into the ocean because she sees Ava. Ava trying to kill herself like Sterling Hayden in The Long Goodbye, by the way, only to discover that it's not Ava, and Ava's just been walking around on the beach.
Well, also, I feel like it was really smart how she got to that point, or how Deborah had the realization that she had done wrong by Ava between the coyote incident, where she realized, oh, I didn't protect my dogs from this threat that I was warned about, I'm a bad mother, etc., and then the combination of that and running into Rosie O'Donnell, who's like, why are you good now? What happened to you? Like, why did your stand-up game come up so much late in your life?
Still can't give Ava credit in the moment, but we know. We know why Deborah's comedy got so much better.
It honestly made me emotional seeing Rosie. I just miss the Rosie O'Donnell show so much.
That Emmy, that Golden Globe is cemented for Jean Smart. But I got very emotional when she was getting increasingly desperate looking for Ava. And now, finally, what are we, in episode 6 or 7? They have come together and they will be doing their own thing because they can't make the most popular show on late night. And who wants that? Be a Conan. Be a Craig Ferguson. I still miss Craig Ferguson's late night show.
See, I didn't watch it that much. Although it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it when I did. I watched Conan religiously as a teenager.
The Craig Ferguson show is truly a proto-podcast because, you know, those questions the producers have you ask, he would rip them up at the beginning of every interview and just have a conversation with someone. I will apologize to the fuckettes who would like us to talk about the last season of You. I haven't started it.
It's fine.
Chelsea has.
I've finished it.
Do you want to give your opinion about it?
Ooh, it's really hard. I found myself really enjoying the first half of the season, which was very classic You, very campy. They introduced these identical twin characters that were very funny.
Identical twins, so hot right now.
But then the back half of the season, I was like, how is this show still going? When will this end? Like, how much longer are they going to drag all of this out?
It is the peril of having a 10-episode season. Some things should just be 6 episodes.
I also found the final episode to be very unsatisfying. And it's hard because Joe, of course, is a horrible person. But from our perspective, pretty much everyone he's ever killed, for the most part, has been justified.
Right.
The show is written in such a way that we sympathize with his character and we want him to succeed and we want him to evade arrest, etc. You can't then expect the viewer to switch perspectives in the last episode and suddenly sympathize with his girlfriend and have this reckoning where it's like, oh yes, Joe is a symbol of toxic masculinity, etc.
I feel like that might have been Penn Badgley's intervention, because if you've ever seen an interview with him, he is horrified at how much, well, I'll just say it, women sympathize with Joe. He's always been on Front Street to be like, this is a bad man and he kills people.
Well, he's not written like that. Also, we get some really, really distressing capital A acting from Penn Badgley in the last couple of episodes that is very hard to watch.
So should I watch this season?
Well, you've come this far. Like I said, I think the first half is quite enjoyable and then it starts to test your patience. But, you know, I enjoyed watching every single season of You. Even the bad ones, there's something so comforting about the format of it. But I really want one of these Dexter You type shows about a woman. We haven't gotten that yet.
Okay.
A sympathetic female serial killer.
I don't think the men of Hollywood believe that that woman exists.
Well, they kind of touched upon it in Promising Young Woman a little bit, although I would want the tone to be a bit more funny and light, like Dexter or You. And You actually does have a very Lifetime tone to it.
Well, you know that the first season of You was actually on Lifetime.
Right. Okay, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I mean, if there was something like Promising Young Woman where she actually was, you know, cutting off men's fingers and balls, I'd be into that.
Yeah, something that also appeals to the same audience that liked Dead to Me.
Right.
I'm not developing this, but someone make that show because I think people would watch it.
All right, guys, we've said it all. We'll be back next week with a Sex and the City rewatch episode.
If you live in LA, please RSVP to our Liz Goldwyn event.
Don't you want to see if my water is going to break on one of Liz Goldwyn's archival Balenciaga dresses? I know Chelsea wants to know.
Will that make it more or less valuable? We'll just have to see.
Either way, it's going home with me, I guess. All right, guys. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.